What is up? Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Inside the Game, episode 66, March 26, 2013. And it just so happens that every single one of the hosts here of Inside the Game comes off of a weekend of PAX East. And I don't know about you guys, but it did tell me one thing. I'm getting old. These four-hour nights, I can't do it. I don't think I can do it anymore.
Did you party too hard, Wheat?
I tried not to. PAX is a different beast, you know.
You should attend the Church of Stefano. This guy.
Oh God.
This guy would go out and party until 4 or 5 a.m. And it would get to the point where he just like randomly walk off, and we'd be like, "Oh no, where is he?" And we look for him or wait for him for 20 minutes. Don't find him. And we all be like, "Well, thus begins the journey of Stefano." And then, sure enough, like at 8:30 or 9 a.m. the next morning, he's ready to go. Off of like an hour of sleep. I don't know how it works.
I know how it works.
With no phone that works there, with limited English. Yeah.
I happen to know how he does it, Jeff.
How does he do it?
The answer is right in front of your face.
It's a monster.
Yes.
That could be a part of it.
That could be.
I think it's youthfulness, too.
Or it could be 8 monster. Yeah. No, definitely, because I'm getting old.
Yeah.
And damn. It hurt. I came home Monday, and I'm like, oh, I'm all good. I'm driving home. I walk in the door, and I literally, like, fall flat on my face. Sleep for 8 hours. Crazy. But PAX, I want to talk about it. But, I guess I would ask you guys how things were since last week, but it's pretty much just PAX in between.
Yeah.
And I know that each of you has a different story to tell, I'm sure, about PAX. I went to your booth several times only to really not be able to even get back there, except for the one time when Idra and Stefano were signing and you were commentating, but your booth was packed.
Yeah.
The entire fucking time. Every time. I went over there 8 times, I shit you not. And it was always packed.
That's because we had TSM signing autographs there. Literally line around the entire fucking booth every time they were signing.
So you really think it was all TSM? It wasn't.
Oh, and we had some part in it, I'm sure. It was a
just
lot. Though.
Kingston put on a good booth, to
they
be honest
did.
With you. Like,
yeah.
They either had the signing going on, which was TSM or us, which pulled in a lot of people, or they had Street Fighter going on with Justin Wong and Ricky Ortiz, which in the years past, it would be just Justin Wong sitting there silently bashing everybody. But with Ricky Ortiz, they both kind of opened up more, and it was more entertaining. And there's a lot of fighting game guys there, actually.
Really?
Like, half of Team Complexity showed up.
Right,
PR Balrog was there.
So they were
Daigo.
Talking smack. Were any of them getting on the microphone?
No, because they don't do that. But I got back there and was on the mic. Like, they played a best of five with Complexity, 2v2. Filipino Champ was there. And I, the whole time, did the most biased, ridiculous, over the top, make fun of Complexity commentary ever, and they thought it was pretty funny for a while. But I could tell a few times when they started getting donked on that I might have been pushing their buttons, so I backed off a little bit. But there's that going on. And in StarCraft, we had fucking 5 players there or something like that with me on the mic. So the booth was packed. There was always something to do.
Yeah,
it was really cool. When we did this at PAX Prime, it was just like Jeff and Bryce and sometimes me, and then like you said, Justin sitting over in the corner. So they really invested a lot more in getting a ton of players there and having a nice setup with everyone accommodated. And the fans really appeared to appreciate it. But like that was the whole focus of the booth. They were barely even showing off their products and stuff. It was actually just the focus was esports and come look at these pro gamers we sponsor.
What? Yeah, it was very cool.
Yeah, tell me about it, DeMuslim. Because well, for like, you, this was like the first sort of con event you've been to. Outside of like, I mean, you've been to like, what, Gamescom or any of the IEMC?
Yeah, I've been to Gamescom, but I never like wandered around or anything.
Gotcha.
I just literally stayed in the Intel Extreme Masters bit. But yeah, this is crazy. Like, it was very weird. Me and Stefano kind of sat on this interview desk, and like for part of the first day, like we shifted around a lot who was playing the game. So for the first few hours, it was Greg and Bryce. And if you're an MLG desk, you get literally lines and lines no matter where you are. Even if you're not in a signing place, you know, you can literally block off part of the hall depending on who you are. But here, like Stefano was kind of sat there, and we have like mums coming up to us going like, "Who are you, by the way? Like, what do you do?" We just like explained it to these people and stuff. But Kingston did a really nice job. They made us all feel very welcome, giving us water the whole time, giving us food the whole time, and the raffles, too. People went absolutely crazy for the raffle, and Yeah, yeah,
the raffle. Really, I got it. I've had some experience with the Kingston raffles, and they're usually pretty bumping.
I think my favorite part was the like random moms who have no idea what pro gaming is walking up and saying, "So, why do I want your autograph?" That was always fun.
I liked one of the attitudes of PAX is like, you can go there to play a whole bunch of games before they come out, so there's certainly that gigantic draw. But then there's also like, this is where the industry goes to give away swag and to treat the guests. So guys would come up to our booth and be like, "Sorry, what exactly is for free here? What are you giving away to me now?" So there's those kind
you
of
don't
questions.
Don't have any squishy balls or a bottle opener. Like, what kind of a booth is this?
We had another son walk up and just start perusing our stuff like they were trying to get on a computer, and they picked up a redhead and like started to put it in their bag, and we're like, whoa, like, slow down. You got to hear our spiel first. And they were kind of like looked perplexed and then scuttled off, and it was like, Jesus.
Yeah, my favorites were the ones who would just like not even make eye contact with you. You're not a person. They're just here for the stuff. They just walk up and grab something off the table and walk on off.
Oh, that's fucking hilarious. What kind of crazy shit were you guys doing? Game-wise, right? Because you guys were always playing normal games against these guys. So what sort of stuff was cooked up for you guys?
Jeff told me to go only Ravens on one base against this fella that was Silver League. And he looked like a decent chap, you know, just kind of had his polo shirt on and stuff and came over and played. And I think he was a college student. I started beating him pretty hard with it, and he wouldn't leave the game, and he lost everything. And then he tried to Baneling bust me in a like hint of desperation, and I was allowed to like seek and miss all the Banelings, and they all died in one bomb. And the guy just left without GG, looked so angry and red in the face, and kind of like just didn't look at me and just got up and walked away. And like, I was just...
Dude, that's awesome.
I felt so bad. I felt so bad.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen like anyone rage quit like that. I mean, I've done a ton of those too. Jeff, you too. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anyone rage quit like that.
Greg got a few funny ones too.
Yeah, I get that kind of stuff a lot because I'm me. They think it's funny. Oh, rage quit against Indra. Ha, ha, ha. So I get that a decent amount. But yeah, the tryhards are the funniest because they sit there like we have a handicap on or we're off racing and making your Vikings or whatever. And they're saying they're trying to roach bust you, and you're just like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
One guy, we had a disconnect. I was one base nuking him, and he had like two harvesters left. And he had attacked with mutilus and zerglings, and like four mutilus broke into my base with a bunch of zerglings. But there's missile turrets, ghosts coming out. Like, I had three CCs, so I probably would have held it off. He was doing damage to me for sure. But a disconnect happened, and we couldn't re-upload. The replay was bugged or something like that. So I was like, hey, would you like a regame, or do you want to just take the win? He goes, oh, I'll take the win. Thanks. And then he
got himself that RAM.
Got himself some RAM. But some of the handicaps that were really funny were day one, we made machine play on windowed mode with the screen as small as it can go in the corner. And then behind that, we had Nancat playing on repeat on YouTube. So that was a pretty good one. Oh, and we set mouse sensitivities to like 10% or 15%. So you're like
that is
shoving
just absurdly hard,
pushing through mud.
Yeah, it takes you have to go like over the whole mouse pad like four times to move a couple of inches. But that turned out to be too messed up. So for the last 2 days, we just kind of, you know, at your own discretion, do something funny. And it's not like anyone was trying to play real games because then it got too boring. So we would just try and see what we could do ourselves. Like, can I beat him with pure Viking? Can I beat him with pure Sentry? That kind of stuff.
Nice.
It was fun. Kingston does a great job of, like Greg and Ben said, they took care of us. But also, like, even when we weren't playing, they were cool with us watching the Street Fighter stuff or rotating around getting breaks. And then they were pretty chill about, you know, it's time to go get lunch. Here's enough time to go do that because the convention's massive. It's something like 50 or 60,000 people rolling through town, so...
There's a lot of people there this weekend, man.
You need to have time to get lunch. You can't just be 30 minutes. So they took really good care of us, and we had a lot of fun. It's just kind of like Greg said, like, by day three, you're ready to start playing competitive games. And
Right.
I was on mic most of the time. What we did for a few times to have a good chuckle was we'd hand the mic over to Machine. And Machine's a really nice guy, but he's not necessarily like a public entertainer. So he'd be like, hey guys, got some games going on here. And Idris going to play Zerg. looks like he's got a turn opponent. And he would just say what's happening. It was, we were just laughing our asses off, but he meant well.
That really doesn't work for these games. That's why we need Jeff there. Because they're shitty games. You can't just commentate them. You have to be entertaining in your own right. And Bryce can say what's happening in a game, but he's not going to make you laugh so much.
Right. It was funny.
But it was adorable watching him try.
And and the Muslim's the only one who walked away who felt bad about his opponent.
Oh, yeah, I love it. When you get one of the tryhards and you just crush the shit out of him anyway, that's the best feeling.
But she called out, too. That was funny. We were like...
Who did?
Machine did. We were like, okay, who wants to play? We've got Idra and Machine here, and then a couple hands go up, and someone plays Idra, and I go... I can't remember what I asked. Something like...
I just asked if anyone thought they could beat either of us.
Yeah, and oh, that's what it was. I was like, does anybody think they could beat either of these guys? Guy raised his hand and goes, yeah, I could beat Machine. Machine's sitting there, he's like, what the hell? This guy's like, yeah, mid-masters, pretty good player. Walked over, got absolutely squashed.
Yeah.
Nice. Machine doesn't, like, he's such a nice guy. He's like, yeah, I kind of won, but he got called the hell out. So
God, that could have been the perfect moment for Machine to just break out into his, like, WWE, you know, just like, what up now, bitch? And just, you know.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
He's so calm and calculated, though. It's funny. We had a 2v2 game that was pretty fun, too, where it was, like, me and Stefano against Bryce and Greg, where... One player had control of the mouse and one player had control of the keyboard. And it turned out to be like the most messy, messy game.
For both bases?
Wait, oh, like...
Both people, yeah.
Oh,
both
I see. A 2v2, like, in a 1v1.
Right? Yeah, 2v2, just, like, using one guy's setup.
Yeah,
one
I remember Machine and Idra doing that and it being pretty fucking hilarious.
It was funny.
Like, it looks like it's going to be all good until you have to attack and...
Until things start happening.
Yeah, exactly.
That's when it all falls apart.
It was the same thing this time?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Game one was super awesome, and we're all laughing. There's a huge crowd for the booth. It was a lot of fun. Game two, Stefano DeMuslim did the most boring strategy on earth. And
I don't mind Viking.
30 minutes later, I just kind of stopped talking. I was like, all right. Mines are killing everything, and they can't seem to kill observers. Okay.
And there you have it. PAX was let me ask, what was like the coolest thing you saw that wasn't in the booth?
Kingston kept us pretty busy, and it took so long to get lunch, so that took up our lunch breaks. So I didn't really see too much else.
Didn't
see that's
anything.
The GEA booth.
The what?
Big fan of the EVGA booth.
Oh.
Yeah, they did a good job hiring the people to advertise for them.
Why? What do you mean?
Just
talented folks there.
Talented folks.
I really want to hear this story, but I don't know that I'm going to.
Some people packs are hired because they know their products and because they're charismatic and people should listen to them. And then other people are hired
for other reasons.
Because they
might attract the eyeballs of the demographic of gamers.
They may have.
To be fair, at the after party, she was sitting there playing like a trading card game, so she might have been a nerd as well.
To be as discreet as possible, Jeff,
yeah.
Was it because of titties?
She may or may not have invested. And I feel like a few people go into those kind of places and they're like, you know, I want my confidence. I want to feel good. You know, it's something we talked about. And I think other people go in there.
She's like, I want back problems later in life.
What could my body physically endure before it destroys itself under the weight? This is one of those conversations that...
I got it. Over at the Twitch booth, it was kind of... We had a much bigger booth than we'd had in the past. You guys stopped through there once or twice. Maybe
it was gigantic.
Once.
It was one of the front ones too.
Yeah,
just like a weird Eastern European dance club party though. The whole time, like your booth's all white. There's loud music. There's guys trying to play tournament. It felt like PAX East passed through your booth.
It's exactly what we were shooting for. You know that dance party feel. Well, PAX rejected the foam machine, which really just I felt like was bullshit, but.
That is a little bit of BS.
And then I did the panel, which you guys were working through, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we needed some more hecklers there. It went good. It went good. We could have used another, like, 2 hours, man.
Do you actually have hecklers?
No.
Oh.
No, they needed some.
No. Oh. Yeah, sure. They needed some. There was some hecklers to Slasher at the very beginning, but that was it. We did have one heckler who asked about Unreal because we didn't say anything about Unreal. And it actually turned into a great opportunity for me to talk about how bad Epic was at supporting their own game in the competitive and esports field. But aside from that, there was no other hecklers.
Hmm.
So I guess that's a good thing.
Did you guys fill up the place and stuff?
Yeah, man. It was pretty full and had a good number of people watching online. So hopefully they'll let us keep doing something esports related. We did not get to do any sort of Q&A, which was kind of a bummer. But it's, we got up to like 2007 before we were like, shit, we really have to turn it on now. And we could have gone for another couple hours. And it was nice. Like, it was really awesome to get to talk about some of the history and tell some of the stories. But we collected like hundreds of pictures and didn't get to show one. You know, we just, it's hard to just, use an hour. And it's too easy to fill up. But it was fun, and I'm glad we did it. And Slasher actually just traveled up to PAX for that and then left right after that.
Yeah, he didn't get there until like that day, I think. We didn't. Yeah. We only saw him on Sunday.
Yeah, he just came in Sunday and departed on Sunday.
Esports dedication.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Other than that, it was just another PAX. It was cold in Boston, like, God.
Very cold.
I loved it.
Dry.
Yeah.
The dryness I could do without, but I like the cold.
Yeah, you're okay with that? A little snow?
Jeff loves the cold.
I have acclimated to Arizona. That was way too cold.
No. So there you go, PAX. And I don't know, did you guys record any of that footage at all? You had to be there, man.
There was no broadcast or anything.
Next time I'll definitely push that we put it out there earlier on that we're going to do it, but... If you're ever on the fence about PAX, I would even say without the presence of EG or Slasher and Wheat, just go because it's just an awesome, fun event. Like playing games ahead of time, literally everyone is a gamer/nerd of the different kinds. Like there's board games, there's role playing, there's just every form of gaming possible. So if you're listening to this podcast, chances are that's something that interests you. And Boston's an awesome city, so it's definitely something worth checking out. But also PAX Prime, which is coming up in Seattle.
Yeah, in all fairness, dude, I gotta say, like, this PAX, I don't think it had
games wise
most
no.
amazing. Yeah, it did. It didn't. Not
Watch Dogs
here.
Black Flag, Assassin's Creed,
The Last of Us, the Elder Scrolls Online was really, I think.
Well, that video was fucking ridiculous. It was like watching.
Oh my god. It's totally
that was the really cool cinematic, right?
Yeah.
The one with
that's amazing.
Ninja assassin running across with the ropes and
the bridge rope. Yeah, and then daggers. He like hops down, catches on another one, and then owns everybody in the face.
Yeah. For a while there, but yeah, it was pretty cool.
Those who played that game said it was pretty great.
Cool. Hope it is. I like Skyrim.
Yep. Also, you guys, we forgot about the big Blizzard announcement. You guys.
Oh jeez.
Oh, that one.
What do you mean? Oh jeez. I know you're all excited for it.
That is so out of left field.
I still don't understand really how it works. It's like it's a trading card game except on a computer.
What? Yeah.
That was the gist I got.
Yeah, what do you mean it's just that, man? I don't understand.
Oh, you know what? I mean, there is people that play those games, and Blizzard does do a damn fine job with what they do, so more power to them. Who knows? Like, go for it, Blizzard. I don't think they're going to pour, like, I don't think in their announcement they're like, guys, we have literally put everybody on this, all right? We pulled people off of every other game. We're going to make the best damn online card-playing game ever to have been made.
Dungeons & Dragons and Magic and whatever have been kind of getting, like, a resurgence, so it kind of makes sense, like. Meh.
And everybody already knows about Blizzard All-Stars. That's their answer to MOBA, so it seems like they're just kind of...
I was more curious about that, because the delays on that make me think that they're really trying to make it more of an esport than they had first implied. So I was hoping they were going to come out and say, we're going to fuck up Riot, this is going to be awesome. You guys can't wait for this, but no, it's just...
Yeah. And we're going to fuck up Magic the Gathering.
Yep.
Wizards of the Coast, better watch out.
I mean, they do have the lore going for them, you know, which is like one thing. They use a lot of their stuff. I think people, you know, generally, like fans will go for that kind of thing. You know that there was actually the highest number of people watching the PAX stream over the weekend were watching for this announcement.
That makes sense. I mean, Blizzard is gigantic, and they generate a lot of hype.
When Blizzard announces that they're going to reveal something that is literally brand new, they have not revealed anything about this, people pay attention because they have the potential to rock the socks off the entire planet. That's why it's kind of funny when they're like, it's like they came back with Blizzard Pog or something like that. And they're like, hey, guys.
Well, so.
Remember the thing from 20 years ago?
I mean, you guys, none of you guys actually play trading card games, right? I mean, Jeff, I would imagine maybe you dabbled a little bit.
As a kid, like the X-Men cards and the Star Wars ones, but not.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, there's actually one thing that holds true when it comes to online trading card games is that generally they're not great. And the Magic the Gathering Online itself is pretty crappy in the grand scheme of things. It's real to the game, but graphically it just kind of sucks. Except for that Planeswalker that came out. If you remember, it was like an Xbox Live title, and then they released another one, and it was sort of like pre-made cards, decks, etc. But it was really popular, especially amongst people that had played Magic and then had kind of. Gone out of Magic and came back or whatever. So the one thing that I do have to say about the game is, in general, compared to other card games, it does look phenomenal. It looks really good from a graphical perspective. Maybe someone who's not even as played this type of game before would play it just because, oh, it's the Blizzard lore. Oh, it looks nice or whatever. I played Planeswalker.
How does that actually work? Is it just like you build your decks or whatever, but then the battles are animated? Like, or
I
what?
I don't think animated in terms of they're just kind of like your fucking card shoots out a beam of light and it shakes and it says, and how much
it's
damage.
It's just the connectivity. You can play other people online.
Right.
It's not really for the graphics or anything like that. It's for the competition itself.
Because that seems like it'd be really cool if you like take it like. I don't know, Pokemon's the only one I play, but you make your deck, and then you have a little animated Charizard fighting a little animated Blastoise, and then they do shit to each other.
There you go, Blizzard. That one's free.
That would have been good.
Greg is revolutionizing the online card gaming industry right now.
I get royalties for that shit when they do.
You get the royalties. This is the trailer, but don't they actually show gameplay? What the fuck? Why do they show a trailer?
Card play, Weed, please.
No, seriously, it just doesn't... Why do they do that? The What Is Hearthstone trailer had some in it. You can like see exactly. But there's like every 2 seconds. It's different footage. So I don't know. Not necessarily like a Yu-Gi-Oh type thing. Oh, here they're showing packs. Man, you're gonna be all over this shit, Jeff. I know it. Man, I could just see you casting this shit. What's so funny, man?
I don't know.
Play that shit for the iPad, though. All right.
Anyways, PAX was great.
If you didn't go, we'll see you at PAX Prime.
Go next time. Go to PAX Prime, Seattle. I bet there's a good chance that Dota 2 will be played there. Maybe even Riot on some level. I mean, probably Riot as well.
Yeah, Riot was everywhere there. I think there was at least three big league teams there.
They had a huge
booth
as well.
And Riot's booth was gigantic.
It was a really good booth,
I think
too.
It was the biggest booth there.
Yeah.
Probably. It was either them or Twitch, I think. You two look pretty close.
Yeah, both in the front row, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other things that we want to discuss is that the new GSL studio is done. And in the wild, I'm trying to bring it up right now, this is apparently a shot from the caster desk. Which, I gotta tell you, man, pictures can be so deceiving, you guys. Because when I saw the building of that particular...
Sorry.
What? Oh, God.
I thought he was hunting in the house.
When I saw the building pictures where it was just empty, I imagined even more room for spectators. And while, you know, they have, like, the really sweet jib, I don't know if you guys see the picture that I threw up.
I'm looking. It looks like they can fit way more chairs in there, though.
That it what?
It looks like they can fit way more chairs than that. Like,
that looks like they just took all the chairs that they had in the other small studio and moved them over to the new one. It's like, well, their chair budget's maxed out. No more.
Well, for right now, I mean, I don't think that that's the biggest of concerns because they actually don't have a huge live audience for their day-to-day shit. And when they do finals, they don't usually hold it at their studio.
Of course, they usually go to a bigger event.
So until we're talking about, like, GSL finals, be one of the 20 lucky people to come watch it live, then, like, I'm not too worried. Anytime they shrink down a studio like that, because a lot of times if it's not a big match, which is, like, less and less these days, every single GSL play day seems to be pretty gargantuan. There's empty seats, and you don't want to have empty seats on screen. So
yeah, of course.
It looks much better to have people standing, so I'm sure they'll add if there's always lots of people standing.
And I think Kaldor did a also did a video of a walkthrough of the studio, a short tour, if you will. It doesn't look like it has the same, like, hey, we could put some fireworks here and shit, which they, you know, still have done in the past.
I don't think they've ever done that at the studio, have they?
That was always like their live event stick.
I seem to recall
some fireworks.
Because I've been in that studio. That was like a room. A big room, but a room. It seems like any kind of pyrotechnics would have been pretty dangerous in there.
Isn't the GOM studio where that one guy almost got burned when he came out of the studio wrong?
Maybe that happened. They never did it.
And then they never did it. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
You might have just answered your own question.
It's like it was a tragic day when he died.
Dude, people have to remember that.
It was so close to just decapitating him. An artillery.
Great new studio. Excited about that. Not a whole lot more to talk about, to be honest with you. I guess one of the things you could relate to the studio thing is the big topic is the Blizzard rumors that are going around and Pro League and GSL being smashed together.
Which we're going to talk about that right now. How about that? I think that's what, you know, I don't think we have any. Oh, yeah, hold on. There, one of the maps has fucking triple pylon block on it again. Like,
is
Christ
it just
almighty.
One?
No, two. Two.
Whirlwind, I know, and I'm not sure what else.
S-Plant.
S-Plant.
Well.
You know Planet is?
Just to be expected.
Well, fix that shit. That's all that needs to be said, man. Let's not.
Neutrals. More little rocks or whatever.
Every time a triple pylon block happens, a fucking kitten's head explodes. That sucks. Fucking Protoss cat haters. Blizzard's master plan. If you guys haven't been keeping up with the news, there has been some discussion as it was, you know, let's just say from a behind the scenes point of view, there's been a lot of stuff being talked about in regards to IPL and the sale of it, what's going to happen to IPL and what's this mean and Blizzard's interest in maybe expanding the WCS and all these things that have sort of been brewing in the background, but, you know, not necessarily that much weight behind any of them to say definitively these things are happening. A Reddit thread went up today that did involve still unconfirmed data and news, but kind of threw it all out there. And so while it is speculation, and we do discuss speculation sometime, we're going to talk a little bit about what they say, but more importantly, like, you know, what does this mean? We have talked about the fact that Riot has certainly found some great success in the LCS and how they split that up in North America and EU, and then they've got the, you know, the bring it all together for a grand hoo-ha at the end of the year. And while the WCS was certainly ambitious last year, I think we all agree. Why are you laughing at?
Do you mean hoorah? Because I'm pretty sure hoo-ha is a euphemism for...
It is, but I think it can also be both.
God, do we have to reference Urban Dictionary and Control?
Hoorah. I think it can be both.
Shindig.
A grand hoorah.
Get together.
Or a
black
grand
party,
hoo-ha.
Big ass tournament.
Yeah.
Play story giveaway, millions of dollars, whatever.
Please continue, sorry.
WCS, while it had great aspirations, it never it kind of failed to impress after the international kind of totally blew up and end of season two for Riot. And so the thought of just whether or not we could have something bigger is certainly a discussion point. So, I mean, I guess I shared with you guys the thread that was originally posted on Reddit, heavily commented, and you know, basically some of the main points that they make are that some of the IPL people would be working with Blizzard now to possibly create something more akin to a regional LCS or qualifier type thing. So, okay. Although the Axiom thing sounds like it got worked out, but the really thing to note is the discussion of region locking tournaments, which we'll talk about in just a bit. That none of the leagues are dying, but that we might see some combination of leagues. And that we could possibly see a lot of feeding into major events, similar to how LCS and how EVO and how some other leagues have done it in the past. So,
well, a couple things to begin with, by the way.
Yeah, where do we start?
First of all, DJ Wheat says we're, you know, sometimes we talk about speculation. It's important to note at this point in time that everything we're saying will be answered on April 3rd. It'll be announced. So I saw one comment in the chat saying, why are we talking about this? There's zero proof that this is real. You're absolutely right. But I can tell you a lot of people that know what's happening, actually. And while it's a little bit broken up because of communication between Korea and the West, the very general gist of what we're talking about is what is going to happen. I can assure you of that. Obviously, the devil's in the details. So there's a gigantic difference between like region locking and not region locking. So that's where our speculation becomes a little bit dangerous, but it's still a fun conversation because something of this level, similar to what we're talking about, is going to happen, if not pretty close to exactly what we're talking about. So that's where the value is. That's the first thing to get out. Second thing that I find interesting is the overall discussion about combining tournaments and region locking, because I think there's a lot that goes into it that perhaps the less hardcore fan doesn't know, or perhaps someone that's looking just at just at what's actually happening wouldn't think of. But one of the things that's really interesting to me about this is that one of the products is they want to put KESPA and ESF closer together and combine their forces almost forcibly. It seems like this is kind of a hostile shove, and I would speculate the part of that is because they're sick and tired of what a lot of you guys aren't aware of, but there's a lot of fighting going on in the background between these leagues. Like MLG's qualifying system for their last MLG was not going to have separate brackets for ESF and for KESPA, but they were forced to because one league or the other was like, well, I'm not going to work with them. We will not attend if we are put alongside those guys in the qualifier. And yeah, that kind of bullying around shit needs to stop. It's terrible.
Yeah, I would say that it pretty much has to be forcibly. Like KESPA and ESF, they do not like each other. ESF was kind of the new guy who came in and tried to take a share of the market that was purely KESPA's before, and KESPA was a big dog for so long they resent any kind of move like that. Just everyone's trying to be the sole proprietor of StarCraft II in Korea. I can't imagine them cooperating of their own accord. This has to be Blizzard telling them to play nice, and I'm actually kind of surprised they're able to do it. I mean, I guess when you get right down to it, Blizzard can tell them you can't play our game anymore if they don't cooperate. Yep. But that costs Blizzard a lot too. If they lose Korea, I don't know, that hurts them as well. So I think that's one of the most interesting things. If they're actually going to be made to cooperate on a very, very, like if everything is like the most harsh speculation about everything being combined totally and controlled by Blizzard, and you know, you just have the one thing, it's almost like LCS where every other tournament is minor and doesn't matter, and they're just going to be doing this one big thing together. I can't imagine the two organizations working together on that level. It would be, I think we would end up with internal power struggles and problems down the line if they're actually forced to work together on that level.
And that's where we have to appreciate how well Blizzard set themselves up with this. I mean, let's remember, guys, it was 3 or 4 years ago where a lot of the disputes that happened in Korea was Blizzard saying, look, this is our game. We designed it. We appreciate what you did with it in Blizzard, with Brood War, but we want to be the decision makers for the game that we created. You flash forward to now, and if I'm KESPA and if I'm ESF and Blizzard comes to me and says, actually, you are going to have to play nice, otherwise you're going to have to find another game to broadcast, what choice do they have? Blizzard has set themselves up in a position where they absolutely can say, hey, if you want to play with our game, you need to actually stop doing these kind of tactics. And I think that's really, I mean, that's why you're getting mixed comments. You're seeing some people say this is a really good thing, I'm excited about, but you're also seeing a lot of Koreans that were tweeting and saying, I'm kind of worried, I'm kind of scared. That's because this runs deep between KESPA and ESF. They do not want to work alongside each other. So like Greg said, I feel like if there's ever going to be a change, it was not going to come under their own volition. I feel like it was going to have to be forced, and then they're going to learn to play nice.
So Go ahead, Greg.
The thing is, if they actually do force their hand, then it goes back to Korean courts. Last time that happened, that wasn't, like, decided. They never – to my knowledge, they never said that, okay, Blizzard can actually prevent the leagues from using StarCraft II to broadcast. They just kind of reached a decision or a settlement outside of court. GOM got the rights. KESPA joined in a couple of years later.
Like, think about this, though, Greg. You have to play on Battle.net to play StarCraft II, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is because Blizzard wants absolute control over their own game. So, yeah, it can go back to courts in Korea, and they could be like, well, we're not completely certain whether or not this is...
But this time around, Blizzard could actually stop them.
Yes, they absolutely could.
No, but this discussion happened like early on in StarCraft II. That option was there anyway. I'm not sure if that's really like a satisfactory response.
Can we rewind just 1 second? Because you almost have to ask yourselves, well, why, right? One thing is that over the past... 8 months, it seems like everyone's been playing nice. So it's not like any big, at least that we know of, fuck yous have happened and there's been some saltiness.
No, that's not true.
Like, well, of course, between the leagues, but not between Blizzard and the other leagues in Korea. And this is why I want to rewind a little bit because, based off of the rumors with the IPL individuals, going to Blizzard and Blizzard kind of thinking, well, we need this, we need some sort of bigger system. In order to make that to work, they'd almost have to have the cooperation of both leagues if there is going to be such a thing as this feeder going on. I think that's partially the reason why they're doing this. What do you guys think about that?
What's your question?
Well, it's not a question. It's not, it's like the reason they're even going in and trying to maybe sort of create collaboration between the Korean scene is because they do want to do something more global. And, how do they work it in if they're going to try to work with all these leagues and organizations?
Sure.
So well, create something bigger.
I think the big answer here, and I don't know that this comparison would ever be made by Blizzard openly, but in the gaming world, it's pretty easy to see. I think you look at the success of like an LCS or a Riot-maintained league and you say, well, that looks pretty good. They seem to have a strong say in how their game is portrayed and how it's directed. There's a global like funneling of one big mega tournament that literally can put on display the full might of their game. Everything's a storyline building up to that. Like, this is how they qualified. This is what they did in the qualifier. This is the drama that happened as they were playing in the qualifier, all that kind of stuff. Like, that all makes sense, and it feeds to a stronger conclusion. Whereas right now you have all these individual entities like, here's our championship, and then the next weekend it's our championship, and then that following weekend, or on the same fucking weekend, here's our championship. Fuck you, this is ours. Ours is the bigger one, and that's all going on. And that whole time, we as StarCraft II fans suffer, because there's no continuity. There's no one guy wins, a week later we're already talking about the next tournament. And if Blizzard has a more clear thread running through all the tournaments and there's more of a storyline, this tournament feeds into that one, this qualifies you points for that one, Blizzard has a presence here, you're going to that, there's the championship that this player needs to get top 5 to qualify for, oh my god, the stress on that player. That all makes more sense as far as I'm concerned. And I'm sure it's not going to be as simple as, like, DreamHack loses a championship, MLG loses a championship, and Blizzard gets to claim the ultimate championship. I think it's just more that those tournaments then have meaning towards a Blizzard WCS or GSL conclusive tournament. And I think that's more intriguing.
Yeah, the storyline is the big thing. Because who actually watched WCS NA? It was just sitting there next to MLG. MLG NA, or MLG is the one that mattered, that everyone watched. And then WCSNA, that happened, but no one saw the games. They can't really say, like when they were talking about the finals, when they're creating prep and content for the finals and stuff, they can't say, oh, you remember that awesome thing that happened at WCSNA? Because no one saw it. It was just completely overshadowed. But here they can take all these great tournaments and then they can kind of claim all of them as their own. Because even if they didn't really do anything with it, even if it was just the tournaments putting them on, the fact that it has been given legitimacy and the fact that it's all funneling into that Blizzard-based finals is now also much more their product. And so they can build off of that much more, and it makes their finals much more exciting.
DeMuslim, you have any comments on this at all?
Not really. Just if I was Blizzard, like, there's no point having the mecca of StarCraft, and it is the mecca of StarCraft, where you've seen how powerful it can be, and you've had this however long war going on for like 8 years or whatever, where they just keep tripping each other up and nobody's a real winner. Like, sure, you get somebody that does win purely out of spite or whatever. You might as well start, like, prevent that from happening as much as possible and just make it one big rocket and, like, lead it to the finish line. Anything else? Yeah, I think these guys have nailed it.
So, a lot of people have just come right out and said this is just speculation and it's probably not even going to be anything big. But, I mean, based off of the rumblings that I have heard in the background, it is going to be something big.
I think it's going to be big, yeah.
Yeah, I hope that people actually don't just sit there and kind of just, whatever, I'm going to be in denial of it. Because I do think that something big is coming from this.
Honestly, there's been enough said in public that it's safe to assume. Like Blizzard has said, there's going to be an announcement. Slasher tweeted that Blizzard offered to bring him out to Korea to partake in the announcement. Like, they're at least making it seem like it's going to be something big. And we hear all the concern from Korea coming out. It's not like they would be upset over something tiny. I think it's guaranteed to be worth paying attention to.
Well, exactly, Greg. It is big. That's not up for discussion. It's just the details of what it's going to be. And I think the closest we'll ever get in terms of speculation to what would have a lot of the Koreans worried, and this is not going to have to make you wander too far off with your imagination. Let's try to think. Why would Koreans be upset about a big change? I mean, there's the ESF, there's the KESPA thing, but I think the glaring reality would be there's going to be a strong encouragement that there's some form of a region lock where regions play within themselves for a lot of these qualifying points / tournaments, and Koreans have been doing pretty okay traveling outside Korea and winning all kinds of gigantic wads of cash.
Can we just talk about that, the region lock potential?
Yeah.
I mean, yes, right? Yes. I mean, let's not assume that it's happening, but let's just play, you know, what if tomorrow or April 3rd or whatever this is announced, and with it the concept of region locking, where now you are selecting what region you want to play in for the season or the year. What do you think that does to the game, and what does that do to the competition as players?
I think honestly for competition, it's bad. I mean, you're giving North American, European players kind of an out. They have an opportunity to make a lot of money, to be competitive without actually having to play against the Koreans. They can just kind of stay in North America, practice as they have been, and the ones who can beat the other Americans, the other Canadians, they're going to win. And the Koreans are kind of segregated. And then we'll all go to the finals. And then the Koreans are just going to destroy everyone like usual. Because there's even less incentive for foreigners to move to Korea, which is where, you know, if you want to have a chance against the Koreans, you really have to practice the same as them. So I think it's going to discourage competition. But it's going to be good for entertainment because, multiple leagues have come out and said, when we're down to the top eight, and it's all Koreans, particularly if there's not even like a single foreigner to be the dark horse to cheer on as an underdog. If there's just eight Koreans, especially if they're eight nameless Koreans, but even if you have like MC or NKP or something, viewership drops. People don't find that entertaining. They need a storyline to attach themselves to. So if you're having all these tournaments where you're guaranteed to see all the big foreign fans, like just look at what happened at WCSEU. You have Stefano's storyline, but then you have all the other big Europeans too. Everyone knows what they're like. Everyone hears them. It's everything we've been saying about personality and storyline and whatnot from pretty much the beginning of StarCraft 2. You have all that, and you get that, and people just want to watch that. But I think it's definitely bad for competition in terms of motivating foreign players to actually try and compete with the Koreans.
I think there's actually it's interesting because I feel like this is one of those damned if you do, damned if you don't, because I don't even have to play devil's advocate. I mostly agree with Greg, but on the same hand, I can see flaws in everything he said. For instance, MLG Dallas was an example of a tournament where, yes, it was all Koreans in the top eight, and yet we had the highest viewership for a StarCraft II tournament almost ever. And sure, you can talk about the anomaly of it being like the first MLG of the year. Perhaps that'll die down. We'll see. Moreover, though, we talk about removing Koreans eliminates like motivation for foreigners to try and compete with Koreans. There is the counter argument, which is simply just actually if they have more to play for because they have a chance at winning, there is more motivation there, and perhaps they become better to then compete with the Koreans once they do meet them. Whereas right now, a lot of the logic we see, or not necessarily logic, but the rhetoric we see is people saying, well, I don't know, why should I focus on StarCraft 2 when I should go to school because Koreans just come over here and take our money anyways, like there's no chance in hell. So it's like that's why I say it's a damn if you do, damn if you don't, because the situation Greg's talking about, foreigners not having motivation to compete with Koreans, that's kind of already going on, except for the few foreigners that have gone to Korea to make that stand. And they've done okay for themselves, but not in recent history. Stefano got bounced out of Korea. Huck's been getting bounced out. Naniwa will return, but wasn't doing so hot at the tail end of that as well. Sase, pretty uneventful. The list goes on. So if you had the opportunity to say, okay, there's a GSL-like championship in the NA scene, are you going to practice harder for that? Or, as Greg theorizes, are you just going to be like, no, I'll just practice the same and beat Canadians and Americans? I don't know. I think there's a lot of logic that people would try harder because now they have a more realistic chance at winning more money, which would motivate them to play better.
What is stopping or what would stop? So, and DeMuslim, I kind of throw this at you, right? So you're currently residing in the lair. Are you then selecting the North American circuit in order to compete in? Do you consider going back to Europe and competing there? Does someone like MC, because SK is a European organization, go out to Europe and play in the European, or does another Korean come and play in the U.S.? Like, do you think we would see
What about EG? Look at the EG example.
Well, right.
Half our team's in Korea and half our team's here. What does that mean? I mean, those are the answers that are going to have – that we have – that's where we're truly speculating, because who the hell knows how that's going to work out. But
I think there can't possibly be a team component to it. I think it has to be person to person.
And then it would be person to person, yeah.
Yeah, it would. I don't know what's going to happen with.
To have a whole team segregated to one place, that'd be just far too messy and just far too hard. Like,
I think you're right.
Right. But what if you had the choice to Muslim, would you, are you staying in the U.S.? So it only makes sense that you are playing in the North American circuit?
I play for Team EG. Where they wanted me, if it was to be America, then I'd stay in America. If they wanted me in Korea or Europe, I mean, what makes sense to them would probably be keeping Stefano and Thorzane in Europe and then our Koreans over in Korea, and then maybe I stay in America. Like, I have no idea. I'd actually like to stay in America. It seems to be the scene which, even though IPL died, it's a scene with, like, such huge tournaments and such huge fan base and stuff. I just enjoy it thoroughly. Yeah, that's a tough question that I haven't really thought about for me personally. But yeah, I'd love to stay in America, I do think. Not because competition is necessarily easier, just competition here is competition, and the lands and such are just so eventful. And yeah, there's a lot to go off here. There's a lot to go off. In Korea, if I was to go to Korea, that's awfully hard, especially if you just kept all the Koreans over in Korea. And yeah, I don't think that would be worthwhile.
Yeah, another big issue is how they're going to divide it up. Like, is there going to be residence? Like, is it wherever you live you can play? Is it going to be nationality? Or can you just actually choose? It can't be just choose, because then, like, half the Koreans, a third of the Koreans will be like, okay, I take NA, you guys take EU, and then they split it all up. So it's really going to depend on Blizzard's kind of just decision to decide, what are the qualifications for playing within a region.
That would be interesting. I mean, of course, again, nothing has been announced. April 3rd, we're going to know. I think we're going to know stuff within the next week leading up to this as well. I still think there's some additional information to come out on it. But this is one of the things we'll discuss during open phones. And love to hear from a spectator's perspective. Like, what would you think? Would it be great if over the course of, several different events, both online and offline, you got to see the North Americans battle it out for a bigger tournament down the line? Or would it suddenly hurt some of these big competitions because you don't have the same mixed feels that you had before? I think these are all things that are up for discussion.
Go ahead, Greg.
One thing I'm not clear on is, like, are people expecting for the actual MLG and the actual DreamHack to then become segregated, like only North Americans play that?
That's or is been the idea speculated, but I don't think confirmed.
Because, I don't know, that seems like the cleanest, easiest way to do it, but then also the most detrimental to competition, because you have less competitions where there's actually all the best players playing together. And the other option would be to like to only give North Americans point from that event, but then that just becomes totally unfair because, you know, what if a North American has an easy bracket? What if there's only like three North Americans who qualify for it? There's been rumors all along of MLG starting to host North American only events alongside their international events, but then yeah, it still makes it seem like Blizzard is taking kind of a backseat. It's the same story as WCSNA. So I'm really curious how they would actually implement the region lock. It seems pretty unfair to the tournaments to tell them that they can only have certain players at their things.
Well, having spoken to a few of the tournament heads, I can tell you that whatever is coming down the pipe, my feeling, my vibe of it is that they're not like sighing and they're like, "Ugh, Blizzard forced our hand." They're super excited about it. And
yeah, I can't imagine.
I think one thing I'm going to remain hopeful about, because all the problems Greg brings up are very true. The details of region locking, the functionality of how these tournaments are going to go down, that's all concerning. I guess I'll just kind of rest ignorantly and optimistically on the side of like they're putting a lot of thought and hope into this. But I do want to say, I do think that if we were ever to have a more exciting and better future, something jarring like this did have to happen. It was going to get to the point where there's not as much reason for foreigners to choose gaming over school or like to pour serious time into something, because we see teams sponsoring all Koreans. We see, you know, I mean, there's arguments to be made both ways, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is it's very hard to be a successful foreigner. And most of that is because Koreans have the advantage of training in Korea, but then also leaving Korea to go win international tournaments, where it doesn't happen the other way around. We don't have foreigners being sent into Korea to go get really good and then steal checks from the Koreans. It's usually just the Koreans winning most of the tournaments. So if we could find some healthy way to create competition that then generates excitement and encourages foreigners to play at a higher level, I feel like that's paving the way for a better future. I do agree with Greg that I think there's going to be some tournaments where it's like, this is the NA only North American GSL, and then a lot of people will be like, well, I'll check it out, but I'm not nearly as excited about that as I am for the Korean one 3 weeks from now. And I think that'll always be the case, but something had to change to make it so that someday people will be a little bit more excited about the European and the North American events.
In all fairness, like during the LCS, there has still been an enormous amount of popularity amongst both the North America and the EU regions, while other organizations and Riot have found ways to still allow these teams to sort of compete against one another. Not in the largest capacity that they had in the past, but, you know, still, making it available. I mean, one thing to consider is that you do get to build those new storylines. You do get to have something that, you know, it has been a very stale storyline on an international level over the past year and a half. So there's something to be said about that. And that some of the NA broadcasts for the LCS have gotten as much, if not more, viewership than the European broadcast.
My question to that is, like, how, I don't know if the disparity in League is as big as it is in StarCraft 2. I mean, I know Koreans are generally considered the best and North Americans the worst, but I'm not sure if it's on the same like difference in skill level as there is in Korea versus NA in StarCraft 2. So that would worry me. I don't think we can just look at that and say, oh, it'll be okay.
Yeah, in fact, I'll just repeat what Ron Paul said, politician himself said, it's not as big, but it's there, and I would agree with that.
Yeah.
The thing is that you've still
the disparity
got
disparity skill level.
The disparity in skill level
between the regions.
Ron
Paul said that.
Well, I mean, that was his username in chat, but and even oh. even within,
well, even I'm just gonna quote Ron Paul right here.
Yeah,
no,
obviously,
Ron
I mean,
Paul
the username
chat.
In chat. Jesus. What the fuck, Weed?
Oh my god, I just
I just got an email from Jesus says.
It says, and even within the leagues,
but, all right, go ahead.
Even within the leagues, there's also some difference, you know.
Yes. It you put a Ron Paul quote on us. I was like, wait, I didn't put you at that. That's interesting.
Oh, my God, no.
League, and I was like, what, is Ron Paul involved in Riot? I didn't know that. All right.
Oh, shit.
Quote so. Ron Paul. All right.
Well, and let's. I'm sure we'll get some discussion going during Open Phone. So let me ask one more thing, and then we might take a quick break, and then we'll come back with Open Phones to kind of close out the show. And that is, how's the game been? I mean, I know that you guys have have been at PAX, but, you know, Greg, I saw you streaming today. I think the Muslim, you were streaming as well. Jeff, I'm not sure if you were streaming, but...
Not streaming.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people, I think, are asking, like, hey, like, what's going on? What are you thinking? We want to hear about your thoughts on the state of the game. So, the Muslim, you want to... Even if it's like you can use this as like diary room time, just like you talking to the camera and tell us what you know, what's bothering you and what do you love and
what's bothering me, within the scene and such.
No, within the game.
The game.
Oh, within the game. Oh, my bad. Sorry.
The muscle was like, "Oh shit, let me get out my list of fucking." I've just been waiting for you to ask me this week.
Like balance issues.
Yes, or just okay, like but... how things. Yeah, or new stuff you're seeing. Like, what do you think?
Well, yeah, going to PAX, I had about 5 days out of the game, and before that I was playing top of GM players, and I got back and I'm playing top of GM players again. Immediately, there's, new trends coming out every week that you can't really account for. I didn't think the break would be that bad, but today I kind of played about 4 games in a row straight away, and I lost against 4 different things I'd never seen before. Not necessarily, brand-new unit compositions or whatever, just very different timings. Roach Rushers coming later, they seem to be getting really, really popular on 2 bases. Before, you could maybe get, 100 supply Roach Rush, and it would do a little bit of damage, and you'd have 60, 70 supplies of Terran. But this guy just did 130 supply, waited for a bit longer than normal, threw down a third and fourth simultaneously, and definitely did a lot of damage to me, and I was a little screwed for a while. Protosses, they're getting back into Oracles, which I've always disliked. Terrans, in TVT, Hellbat drops are coming back a little bit, which is surprising. I played a couple of Korean Terrans, and they immediately were just Hellbat dropping me all over the shop with multiple medevacs, too. And I don't, given that they only hold 2 cargo-wise, they were just doing it with 3 or 4 medevacs here, there, and everywhere. And, yeah, if one of those guys gets inside your mineral line, you're pretty much screwed. And if you kill 2 medevacs full of them, no worries. No worries. As long as one of them gets in there, it's 2 volleys, and you've just lost about 15 fellas. You're in quite a bit of trouble. And, you know, that's been...
Why are you becoming more British as you're talking? What is happening?
It's the monster, man. It's getting the best of me.
I'm going to start using that. He killed 37 fellas.
I've hated Hellions for the longest time. Jeff's best memory of me losing to Hellions was against Select. And that was 2 normal Hellions. And now these guys have a cone-shaped attack and do even better. It's even worse. So, yeah, I definitely have to fight back some profanity every now and then when I'm streaming. But, I think the game's way more fun than it was in Wings of Liberty, though. That's one of the cool things that I've been seeing, and finding every game enjoyable right now.
Greg. And now it's Greg with the weather in Seattle.
I don't like Zerg. I don't know. It still feels like you win mid-game or you lose in both matchups. The Protoss late-game army has been talked to death, and the Terran late-game army with Hunter Seeker missiles and BCs and Blood Bio all over the place, and just Widow Mines, and they're not even using Ghosts yet, except for Innovation, apparently, which is scary. I don't know. I don't like Zerg.
Greg, can I, do you ever play, and are you ever thinking to yourself, if I could only, as in, if I had this by this time, or if I had this at Tier 1, do you ever consider what you feel is missing from Zerg when you're, if you're in these situations?
It feels like a late-game response to air. Particularly heavy armored air is what's really missing. That's what the invincible combinations are. Mech can be dealt with if you get the right ratio and all that stuff. But if they get a bunch of Battles Cruisers and Ravens and Viking support, or if Protoss gets the Tempests and Void Rays with High Templar support, it's just Zerg's anti-air is severely lacking, I feel. And we're strong mid-game, but it's not strong enough to always force the issue should Protoss or Terran be going for that late game. So either something that's just overpowered mid-game so that we can force them to be super uncomfortable and take the back foot in the mid-game, and I think that's a terrible option, or just a way to actually fight with them on pretty decent footing in the late-game, either buff Corruptors or, I would say rebuff the Infestor, given that that was the answer before, but that turned into terrible, boring gameplay, and I think the Infestor, yeah. I agree, Jeff. I think the current Infestor is much better for gameplay, and they should leave it like that. They need to make Corruptors better. Maybe give Corruptors a spell, man, that's actually useful something.
Edra, I know what they need to do, man. In the single player, you can have swarm hosts that shoot the aerial swarm locusts.
Okay, yeah, let's
there
do that.
There you go. Let's do that.
I actually have a better idea.
Make that shit an upgrade, boom. It's like ground carrier.
Give Corruptors Broodling Dandruff.
So they, like, as they fly, every once in a while they'll just go, and, like, little broodlings will drop out of them.
No, make corruptors shoot out Scourge. More free units.
I'm going to do my best Phil impression. What's the name of that guy? The talk show host who, like, helps people? Phil?
Dr. Phil?
Dr. Phil. All right. Now, Idra, a year and a half ago, you were complaining about Zerg in the late game. You didn't like winning 45 minutes late. You didn't like how you had to go there. Your options were limited. Now in Heart of the Swarm, you don't like winning in the mid game. You don't like not winning in the mid game. Still the same, I suppose. I found the answers. It's the early game. Focus on the early game, and Idra, you're going to find your happiness. God bless. Thank you very much. Tune in next week with Fat Babies.
That worked to be okay, but it doesn't work. So, kind of sucks.
DrPhil.com, ladies and gentlemen. Yep. If you need more. And
tune in daily at
Dr. Phil's StarCraft Advice.
It's on at some channel or another. Yep.
Yeah. That name we're leaving. All right. Jeff, what do you...
I'm going to echo the Muslim sentiments a lot. I actually just find the game a hell of a lot more exciting, just in general. I thought this MLG was fantastic, and a large part of that was because the games were a hell of a lot more exciting. We were really worried about kind of like the inconsistency of gameplay or that the Void Ray would just get absolutely abused throughout the entire tournament. But those things didn't happen, and it was one of the best and most exciting MLGs I've ever witnessed. With a diverse set of strategies that were really fun. There was no, like, one thing that everybody did, and then that's just, you know, what won the tournament. I really liked that. I didn't see as much mech from Terrans as I was hoping, but the mech that we did see was really cool, namely that Whirlwind game against, I believe it was Life, actually, one of the games he dropped to...
Well, it was Last.
It was Last, right. Last actually played a pretty cool mech, which is weird, because his bio control was, like, what he emphasized the whole time, but... that part of it I'm really excited with. Battle.net in general, I'm really happy. You know, for all the same reasons we've talked about, so I don't need to belabor the point, but I just think the experience is a lot better.
Do you guys, because I know you do interactive stuff, do you have, like, groups set up or anything like that, or you actually...
That's for commentators. That's for commentators to give a public tug.
I don't have one. I just...
Husky's got, like, 40,000 people that sit in a channel named Husky.
Wow. Whatever, dude.
Yeah. Whatever. You're next, Wheat. You'll do it. Wheat, I got faith. You could get 10, 20, maybe 30 people in that channel and sit there.
Dude, that's all good. don't. Not as... But, I mean, you like, select guys from channels and stuff. From Raid Call. That's right.
Yes, we do it, too. But I also got to say, too, there has been a shot in the arm, which is what we were hoping for, and I think a lot of us talked about that shot in the arm with, like, a weird... maybe it's not going to happen kind of feeling, but it's nice to talk about. And I think it's nice to have it confirmed that the stream viewers are back up. They're quite nice. It seems worthwhile to stream, and it feels really fun to do that. It was just MLG, so we'll have to wait for DreamHack. We'll have to wait for future tournaments. But 140,000 people tuning into a StarCraft match where no foreigner did make a deep run to make that really cool storyline, that's really encouraging. And
yeah,
that's the kind of shit that's going to happen if that's what's going to go down on a regular basis. If Greg's going to stream to, I think he had like 9,000 today, and Sval's hitting high numbers. Like, if that's the kind of stuff that's going to happen on a regular basis, then it feels good because there's life in a game where I think everyone will agree at the end of Wings of Liberty, it was feeling kind of bleak. It was feeling like, oh shit, they did it wrong. This game's going down. And now it feels much better.
Well, everything's more versatile right now. Like, everybody has more than one option of what they can do in a matchup. Like, Terran, I know... it's always been like a division between mech and bio, but now there's absolutely anything you can do from any point of the game. Like, all the openings are different, lots of aggressions going on all the time, and like from Zerg too, whenever I play a Zerg, it's like Roach Hydra, Roach Baneling, Roach whatever, Zergling Muta, Ultras, Broodlords. Like, I can see absolutely any unit composition, which is great any point of the game. And just watching games, there's no longer that feeling where, okay, I know exactly how this is going to roll out. Unless this happens at exactly this point in the game, that Zerg is going to win, and he's going to win the whole tournament. There's none of that anymore. And the big thing with Wings of Liberty was obviously, it was just getting boring seeing the same guys winning constantly, but also with the same thing constantly, and there wasn't really an answer to it.
That was the part I had a particular problem with, was I mean, same guys are going to win. Like, that happened in Brood War 2. But
right.
if they're doing the same thing over and over again, then it's
right.
like,
exactly.
Right.
Exactly. There was just no answer to it, really, apart from doing the exact same thing, and you had to play the same race in order to do that. So it's really nice that we saw, like, the big anomaly Life do really well at MLG, considering before the tournament, everybody said Zerg didn't really have a chance, and that just shows how new and exciting the game is. He just came away and blasted everybody out of the water with just this kind of unique play style, which people have started mimicking a little bit, but yeah, not to the same degree. StarCraft's just exciting again. It's volatile and it's cool. And we do see the same people that were really skilled at the end of Wings of Liberty yeah. come out on top again. So it's not as if it's volatile to the point where it's completely random. It's just volatile and very aggressive right now, and the good players are just catching on very quickly.
You guys want to take some calls?
Sure.
Let's cheer it.
All right. You know, pretty much whatever we chat about on the show today, or anything else you'd like to discuss or consider. Oh, one second, caller. I got to adjust this. So one sec, so that you guys can hear each other. All right, we got our first caller. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? All right, first caller, failure. All right, we got our real first caller this time. I don't know.
You knew it was a troll?
He called with, I don't know. It could have been a fail on my side. I'm sure he'll call back. Hello, caller.
Hi, my name is Ron. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Ron, doing great.
Hello.
So you guys covered basically something that I was going to ask last week, so it's kind of cool, but I just had kind of wanted to say my ideas and like what you guys thought about the whole region locking thing.
Sure.
I know that you guys said a lot of stuff, but I was thinking if it does get region locked, pretty much 80% of the prize pool right now is going over to Koreans. I think that that would leave more money and more incentive for the players. It would also, a lot of people say, oh, NA is lazy, the foreigners, they can't play as well. I think that it would really bring out some of the foreigners and make them shine and when they're winning the tournaments. You know, if Idra, for example, if you were a four-time MLG champion, I think that you take a lot of heat for how good you are, but because you didn't have those number one successes, people look down on you for that, and you actually, I believe that you're a lot stronger of a player than what people give you credit for. I think that it would be more money for teams and more eyes on the sponsors. More people will start to emerge from that as well. A lot of people that maybe, like you were saying, I don't want to play because there's nothing to play for because I can't be Korean. I think those people would start to emerge a little bit better. So better player growth and growth of the NA scene and EU scene, like restructuring. So, I mean, that's kind of my opinion, and I was wondering what you guys thought.
You know, what do you guys say? I mean, ultimately, in a nutshell, like it would sort of escalate the popularity and the interest in some of the other regions by being able to focus on rivalries, matchups, champions, etc. What do you guys think?
Maybe. It depends if the players can deliver or not. Like, if all the NA games just look like two idiots bashing their heads together, it's not really going to work out. But if they can produce good games, or if they can be interesting at least, then yeah, sure, it can work out.
It's the big if. If you have Americans only playing against Americans, you might have these guys that then, like everybody, or Jeff already went over this earlier, that if you have these guys that then think, oh, I have a chance now to actually do very well in this scene, like I'm going to practice really, really hard, and then you can have these other guys that are like, well, if I win here, it's not really a legitimate win because the best people weren't competing and such. So either way, it can go, people can either frown upon it or be like, wow, this is amazing. And then what if they had like an end of year tournament where they did bring like the top performers from each region together and then held like a really cool tournament? Like that idea would be cool. But yeah, we don't know yet how it can go.
Yeah, the notoriety thing's not going to help at all. Everyone's just going to discredit it as, oh, well, the Koreans weren't playing. And I mean, right. people forget about wins anyway. Like what the caller was talking about, I've won 3 or 4 major tournaments. People just forget about it anyway. That's our viewership's just not very smart, and they have the memory of goldfish. Yep. So that's not going to help.
It didn't help, though, that the scene was like, or tournament scene was massively
yes.
oversaturated.
Yes.
If they do spread it out really, really well, that you have a major tournament, like let's say every month or every 3 weeks or whatever, that win actually means something for those 3 weeks to a month. That's enough to solidify it. Whereas now, when you won IEM China, for example, people forgot about it within like a few days because there was like a GSL championship right after, what have you. And it just gave people like too much to watch, too much to absorb, that when you say like they are too dumb, well, no, they were just like bombarded with too much stuff constantly. So if they can spread it out equally, that everybody can just take it in and like have a deep breath and then the next tournament's going, maybe having it region locked will actually mean something pretty cool.
Well, I think they are dumb too, but there's some truth to that.
Don't take us right away to say that, Ben. But
okay,
I do feel like one opportunity that could occur here too is like a more well-kept and designed WCS. I was absolutely madly in love with the WCS system, but it was obviously executed in a way that had a lot of problems with it that I think everybody knows about, so there's no reason to pretend that that didn't happen or that we need to talk about it again. But if this is like a glorified WCS produced by DreamHack MLG and your GSL combined with Kesper or whatever, then that to me seems like a pretty cool opportunity for like, yeah, it's North America, but let's actually give it the attention it potentially deserves and build it up to something, as opposed to, like Greg said, hey guys, head over to the blue stream. There's a WCS match going on right now. Up next, we have Boxer versus White Raw. Fuck you, the world! Like, that's not going to actually work. So I hope it gets the attention it deserves, and it could be a good opportunity for that.
All right. Caller, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a great night.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
Let's take another one. We got area code 434 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's your question?
Hey, guys. This is Alex.
Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hey. Going back to your point, you know, Blizzard's not yet announcement their region locking thing. I was, kind of as a spectator, I was thinking, you know, I want to see, like, more games played over a longer period of time. So to explain a little bit, EG recently sent over Stefano and Thorzane to Korea, and Stefano participated in the GSL. He had a pretty good run. He did all right, but it was kind of like a one-and-done ordeal. And I was just kind of feeling like, from a spectator point of view, I want to see, like, a longer progression. So the region locking, to me, seems really good. So you have, the players that you follow and enjoy, you can see more games from them. And then, once the whole big shebang happens, if that's the way it ends up being, you would, end up seeing those players having gone through a journey. And then, at the end, possibly have this huge payoff, big payday sort of thing.
That's very specific to just going over to Korea, though, right? Because say if you had Stefano win DreamHack, and then he's not really allowed to partake at MLG, that's a huge, huge miss in which you don't have the DreamHack foreign champion coming over to MLG to then compete against the few Koreans that partake only in the American events, So...
Yeah, I see that point. But, like, I'm talking, like, for, storyline, maybe not specifically from Korea, all that, but I'm more looking at in terms of, the storyline of players, if you have a person that you follow specifically, you would end up getting to see more big games from that person, I think. Like if, I don't know how it would be set up, so I couldn't really pass judgment on that yet, but I think that maybe you would be able to see more big games from those people.
If you drag out things too much, people lose, like they only have a certain amount of attention span, and unless there's something that's actually keeping them hooked in, like that's why every tournament isn't a big round robin or Swiss system or whatever. That's the most competitive, like has the most competitive integrity, but it's kind of boring. It's not as exciting. When matches are elimination matches, that's when it's cool. That's when somebody's right. Actually on the line. If you're going to play someone well, if I lose and I have another 9 matches to play, it's not exciting. Like, people who really, really like one player and just want to see them play a lot of games at all costs, it'll be great for them, but most people just aren't like that.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks.
Yep, thank you, sir. Have a good one. All right, I'm not going to rate that call, Skype. Take that. Let's take Charles. Hello, Charles. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Just an easy question for you.
What do you think is the most underused unit or ability in the game that you wish you saw more of?
Seek a missile.
Blind
Get
cloud.
The fuck out of here.
I think ghosts might be up there too. I never see ghosts, and I don't know. I really think they could be good.
I haven't really seen that much Yamato cannon either since the big buff it had. Like,
yeah, battlecruisers don't get used as much as I would expect either.
You know what's funny? Real quick. I would answer too, but it's just going to be another Terran unit. Terrans have a tough time getting past the Marine Marauder medevac. A little bit.
Well, they don't really have much encouragement too, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it would be... I mean, as a Protoss, I see a lot of ghosts, so I guess I wouldn't ask for any more of that. But Ravens seem pretty cool. I like... I like that. I think they're in a good balance right now. I mean, I guess in TVZ they're supposed to be pretty ridiculous, but it seems like they needed a little extra something to make them worthwhile. Otherwise, there's kind of this gigantic dead zone where you made a bunch of Ravens, but they don't have enough energy, and then they launch their one missile, and the missile gets dodged, and then that's the end of the Raven for the next 5 minutes, you know? So I appreciate they're working on it, at least.
It feels like a lot of Terrans use Ravens like a lot of people use Templars. It's like, okay, I've tossed up my one secret missile. What do I do now? Shit, I can't make this into an Archon.
Yeah, that's rough. Wouldn't it be great if everything turned into an Archon? God damn it, this pair of Zerglings, fuck. There's only two left. Oh,
if the Raven could turn into a Viking, I'd be totally cool with that. That's fine. Like a ground Viking.
Yeah, Blizzard calls it a crow. Suddenly it kills everything.
Someone said Nidus as well. Do you think we're still not seeing... seeing some Swarm Host Nidus stuff.
Yes.
I want to see more Nidus from people that are not TLO.
There needs to be a lot more Nidus. So I think Zergs need to get in the habit of just making one, and then things like they run up high ground and kill a fourth, and instead of now going down the ramp and probably losing their entire army,
you know,
just Nidus out of there.
I agree, Jeff, and it makes you wonder why the fuck they reduced the price of the Dark Shrine, but they were like, hey, the Nidus network's all good.
I think the problem is more the utility of like how quickly or well, I mean, how slowly things unload, and if it gets caught in there, then you know, or if the worm dies and your army's just kind of stranded.
But if you could spend less for it, then it wouldn't be. It's not like your puppy dying, you know. Then it would be like
sometimes it kind of is because like
goldfish died. Like bummer, we'll have to go get another one for 99 cents at Walmart. Like
it's like the goldfish that was towing around your tugboat that all your units go into died, and now they're sitting there in the tugboat waiting to get killed by the Colossus. Like,
I would be cool with an upgrade that made them come in and out faster. I think that would be cool.
That would
but
be a good idea.
I don't think
maybe
you could
like
naturally
shot
do
them
it
out.
Because there's too many times where it's like you just like the Nidus worm just opens up, and if it was like in Brood War, it's like ta-da! Like the whole army's there all of a sudden. You're like, ah, damn it, 2 seconds too late. But I would be cool with like Zerg's investing just a little bit, like a 100-100 upgrade or something like that, to make it unload faster. I think that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you can't buff the current Nidus worm as it is, like just as its natural state. Because if anything did come out faster, you know the situations where you just find it with probes and you try and kill it. And say if, like, 8 roaches popped out instead of 3 or 4, like, you'd be kind of screwed. But I think drops with swarm hosts aren't used enough either, actually. I think those are really devastating.
I love that Demuslim's like, I can't kill it fast enough with my probes. Like, come on. It's like, you can use probes.
That happened to me against, like, a gold guy at the Kingston booth.
Wait, are you, like, distant relative to a Nidus worm or something like that? Like, it's like a personal thing for you, like...
I am.
So bad to reduce the cost.
I think that it's such a cool utility that is not used because of its cost and its and how fragile it is.
And because people can kill it with their workers.
Yeah. There was a period of time when it was used a lot, but yeah. That was just
back when people couldn't focus enough to...
Well, we're talking about one specific scenario. I don't necessarily think they should be buffed in the utility of... They pop up in your base and deliver an army. I think that it'd be better if they were used in a way where it's like more mobility around the map and seem to evacuate armies that they didn't have to lose and be more cost effective.
Sure.
Opposed to, because it's like larva control too that's really important. Like Zergs can have 5K, 4K bank, but when they're rebuilding Roach Hydra and using up all their larva and then they need to shift their army around, they don't have the larva to do it. That kind of messes with them. But if they can just Nidus Worm out of there, take another decent engagement where they lose their entire army, but at least it's like more cost-effective than coming down a ramp and getting force-fielded, that's a good situation for the low, low cost of a Nidus Worm.
They're just really annoying to use, too. Like, say if you're all getting attacked all over the map, if it was more like a recall kind of thing, where you could grab a Nidus and like recall a chunk. Like, I don't mean a huge chunk of the screen, but you can just like almost box select a group of units to go into the Nidus and like come out and stuff.
Sarlacc pits. We'll call them Lacksack rock picks. And then you can make a little spot. The ground opens up. There's a mouth. It swallows the Zerg army, and then it shits it out at the hatchery.
That'd be pretty Zergy.
Literally, you know what? Too Blizzard. I know you're listening. The animation should be that anus thing at the top of the hatchery, literally launching the units out.
Oh my god.
And then they land around like a spore crawl. You could actually borrow a lot of the animation from a spore crawl, only it's like a Hydralisk comes shitting out and then a roach.
And then Apollo can make a video and be like, and this is the best use of the new Control F2 where you can grab your whole army since it's just shit it all over your third and your natural. It's like, great.
I like how just the word army was the only really British
word. Oh, okay, okay. Mr. UK over here. All right, Charles, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See ya.
That short question lasted 6 minutes
actually,
and 18 seconds. Yes.
Man, that makes so much sense. No, never mind. All right. No more poop jokes. We're good.
Well, we'll put a stop to those. We've got... got Colin on the line. Hello, Colin. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, hello. I'm a big fan of all you guys, by the way. Just going to put that out there. My question real quick is just back in the old Brood War and Warcraft 3 days, maps were like a huge part of the game, and I'm sure this question was answered a few episodes ago. Like back, but with the release of Heart of the Swarm, I was just wondering, like, what is your guys' opinions on like maps and whatnot?
For me, nothing's solid enough to say, like, which map is really imbalanced for what. Like, there's maps that definitely benefit certain things, be it, like, Whirlwind for Mutalists and Drops, given that the third base is so disconnected from the main and such, and it's very easy to transfer and what have you. But, sorry.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, nothing's solid enough in strategy that,
What are you guys
Sorry, Greg.
Greg typed in chat... It starts bleeding when an ultralisk goes through.
Oh,
I started picturing it going like, ah!
You guys are terrible.
Sorry, yeah.
All right.
But your question's very...
I've lost every thought I ever had, apart from an ultra.
Well, I think one of the things I want to do, and I always would like to take this opportunity, because there definitely was a time... where we could fill a complete 2.5 hour Inside the Game with just bitching about how terrible the maps are, and then we'd be like, Blizzard, you know, do you even lift? But we live in an era where they're absolutely paying attention to that. The map pool for the ladder is really good. They are putting destructible rocks in places where, for most part, you can't be triple pylon blocked or something like that. Obviously, that needs more attention. But I guess the bottom line is they seem incredibly much more responsive about it. So I think as tournaments advance, we do need to see, again, those Kespa and ESF and obviously the guys outside of that, too. I think ESV was doing it for a while. We need to see the maps that come out from the community because that's what's kind of driving competition. Blizzard's busy with, you know, balancing the game and that kind of stuff. But I like that there's a scene in a reality right now where you could make a map, and if it's good enough, it's now no longer like a weird dream that it ends up on the ladder. It's actually kind of a reality. And that's pretty damn cool, and I think that's worth mentioning.
Yeah,
maps were just so incredibly important in Brood War, because like, and the map makers were incredibly good at what they did. Like, they had it down to the second. If the rush distance is like more than X seconds, then TVZ is not going to be balanced. If the third is so, like, there's so much open space at the third base that can, then you can engage into it and whatnot. Just, they had it down to a science. They weren't just making things and then tweaking it as it was balanced. And we really need a map making scene to develop like that again. And I think a little bit more turnover wouldn't hurt. Like, we had Antigua for God knows how many seasons. Daybreak has been around forever. But yeah, it's definitely getting better. Like Jeff said, like, some of the, like, the old Blizzard map pool that persisted for years was pretty silly. And now it's competitive maps. It's stuff that you see. They're relevant. They're reasonably balanced. They're taking taking a stand on things like the ramp blocking, fixed positions and whatnot. So it's definitely improving. But I think we really need non-Blizzard entities to focus a lot on the map making.
I'm trying to find the specific thread, and I'm having some issues doing it. But, you know, there's been some discussions about the modifications of the... I think this is one of those maps. Well, yeah, of course, it's Fighting Spirit. So the modifications of the bases to be the one gas and gold minerals. Have any of you guys seen these yet?
I heard about that a long time ago, about how it more closely mimicked the Brood War rates of mining. And I think the biggest plus was that it encouraged more expansions because you would need less workers per base. So like having six bases, having five bases would actually matter. Whereas now it's extra gas income, but you can't actually use... If you have that many drones or workers, then it cuts into your supply too much. So it's definitely worth looking at. I think it would create a more fast-paced game if expansions were more important.
Oh, I wanted to say the thread that I found, Greg, was actually they were commenting on they felt like the pace or the comments from Korea were that the pace felt more like a Brood War pace.
Yeah, I saw that a long time ago and thought it looked pretty promising, but it never caught on at all.
Do you see it catching on, or do you think it's just a
no?
No.
We talked about this, actually. We had it on the show. We chewed it over. It got a big blog on Team Liquid. A lot of people were talking about it, and then it faded into absolute obscurity and never to be seen again.
Yeah,
until...
but you know what? That was pre-Kespa. That was pre-them getting involved. And, you know, even Greg opened this up with how much, you know, they contributed to maps as well and how that was important in Brood War. So
I think if big tournaments use it, it could honestly catch on.
I mean,
if it
it's
does...
just not going to, though. It's not. It would upset Blizzard because
they were the first
saying,
ones to remove the Zelnaga Towers, right?
Sure.
But wait, so no, it is being used in Kespa, right? It's one of the Kespa maps?
Yeah, it's like, well, I think it's like sort of a beta, but yeah, five Kespa maps were published on the Korean server today. They're being tested for round four Pro League.
I think if it makes it into a big league, it could definitely become a thing.
That would be interesting. I can't imagine how they could do that.
I agree, Jeff. Like, I don't want to take, you're right. Like, it takes a lot. I think to get a map accepted, but I think if they're pushing it, it has more likelihood of getting accepted. Artemis, I'm looking at too. This one has the expansions that are the one gas minerals. I don't know.
We'll see. I feel like that would be
you really are just not digging it, huh?
Well, if for Kespa to do that, to change the pace of a game. You're challenging the entire fabric of the rest of the competition. When you send a Kespa player to MLG now, if they're not playing on this map...
It's a single map that you get the opportunity to veto when the option comes. And
oh, you know what?
Is that
you're
not
right.
Exciting?
Changing the rim size on one of the hoops on the basketball
court.
Oh,
for Christ's sakes, Jeff. It's not like suddenly I can make Zerglings that do 50 more damage.
Let me just tell you, when you take the pace of a game and you change it, whether you can veto it or not, you are...
See, here's where I disagree, because I want to... And you're going to be like, oh, here goes Wheat talking about Quake 3 again. But Quake 3 had very distinct styles of maps. You could have Aero Quake 3, which was like the most fucking... It would be like the Steps of War of FPS. It was so like tight-cornered that every game was like 35 to 24. And then you had a ZTN, which is like a huge map... They always had low scores. Like, isn't that the same thing? The map maker dictated the pace of this game?
I think it can be even less involved than that. I think this is one of seven maps in the Kespa rotation. It's going to be in the lineup sometimes. They're going to have to play it, but it's only going to be one match. And if it produces good games, because they're forced to play it, we are going to see games on it. If it produces good games, then maybe Kespa has two or three of those maps next season. And if it keeps being good and people like it better than regular maps, then it becomes a thing. It switches over slowly but surely. I think if it does what it could do to gameplay, if it makes it more fast-paced, if it moves us away from death balls or moves us away from three-base all-ins, I think it could be excellent, and I think people really want that. Like, we see the excitement that we've all talked about and that's apparent in the fans in the switch from the Infestor Broodlord death balls and the Super Turtle boring, already planned out Wings of Liberty games to the new, exciting, dynamic games of Heart of the Swarm. And if we can make that a permanent thing, a stylistic thing with maps, I think it could definitely catch on. So I'm really, really happy Kespa's doing this.
We will see. Will Jeff be able to look back and go, ha, 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 you idiot. Or will suddenly, gold minerals everywhere.
Like, I mean, it's a massive change. It's going to change the game on a pretty deep level, like a very basic level. So it's a big change, and I wouldn't be surprised if it just, like, goes away entirely after this one failed season. But we'll see. We can hope.
We'll see. All right. Colin, thank you for your call.
And then I win.
Oh, thanks for having me.
No problem. Take care. And then I win. And you allow bow to my greatness. All right. Take another call. We got Kerry on the line. Hello, Kerry. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. How you going, guys?
Hello. What?
Okay. So, you know recently how a lot of like players recently changed their ID names. I was wondering what you guys thought. I also get that like aliases are a really big part of gaming, obviously, like I've been gaming for like the last 10 years or so. I was wondering what you guys thought about maybe like for pro players making it like them use their real names, like the Koreans do, if I've been told correctly. Yeah.
You mean in the game? When they're laddering and stuff?
I don't know about laddering, but like
just like that's what you're referring
like
to.
Minigun,
as.
Idra, In Control have like Jeff Robinson, Greg Fields. I don't know what Minigun's real name is actually, but yeah.
It's Chad motherfucking Jones, man.
You want to know about real names?
Jesus. Yeah. So wait. So I guess the commentators use their real names and stuff like that.
I don't know. Like, don't the Koreans call them by all their real names? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Mostly. Just like however they do it. Not however they do it, but like you know, kind of like how they do it. Just like yeah, I guess it MLG is the commentators.
I mean, there's pros and cons to both, but as far as I'm concerned, I like handles, man.
Me too.
I think it's it keeps the gaming aspect alive. I think it's more exciting, and I don't necessarily like if someone's like got a rousing match between Ben Baker and Greg Fields, going to be an excellent match. Can't wait. Whereas Idra and DeMuslim's cool, but then you do get the guys who are like poopy pants Jones, and you're like, all right, that doesn't sound very cool at all. But typically, Poopy Pants Jones doesn't make it to the big stage. Names, there's like the Uber fans that know all the Korean names, but then there's the rest of the planet that still calls him Bomber, still calls him Flash, because that sounds cooler, and because four other Koreans have the exact same name, so that shit gets confusing to us non-Koreans. So
I'd say that that's actually the biggest problem, because to us, Korean names aren't names. They're just sounds. So good luck memorizing them, you know, unless you really spend a lot of time on it. It's not like you hear his name is Jeff, and it's like, oh, Jeff is a name. I remember that. It's like his name is Lee Sung-hyuk or whatever, and then...
Idris says it just sounds, and all I hear is like, and welcome. Whoop, not yet. It's like, what? I can't...
The other reason I ask is, like, everyone's always, like, asking how you can raise
that is
professionalism.
Not, no, hold on a second. That is not racism. You guys are fucking stupid. It's just the way language works. Fucking idiots. sorry.
I'm glad I could get a... This is going to the front page of Reddit. I'm glad I could do that intro, thanks. But, I just, like, people are always like, oh, how can you, like, help promote esports? And I don't know, like, sometimes I just feel like it's really, like, I don't know, it's just weird when someone comes to the stage and the name is, like, Killer or something, and then it's, like, some scrawny-looking Korean dude or something. I don't know. I think it's just... I don't know. I wonder what you guys thought about it.
Well, I see. So you want people to properly represent their actual names. I see.
No. Just like...
You have this guy, this like master guy that lives behind this curtain, and every StarCraft player is taken to him, and you will be known as Skinny Fucker.
Your name's is Jeans Puncher, because you punch jeans.
All right, Kerry, thank you for your call, dude.
Guys, can I just make a quick shout-out to everybody in Australia in the C scene? And
only because it's everyone in Australia, and you included all of them.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
And Goatlust, fuck, he needs to come to an event. ACL is in Brisbane. He lives in Brisbane. He needs to come. He needs time.
All right,
God,
I'll tell him that.
The coolest voices.
I wish I could talk like them.
They do, man. They do. I'd have like 26 wives if I had that accent.
Marcus Aurelius is calling the show?
Yeah, well, you got to answer when Marcus Aurelius called.
I know, right? I thought he was dead. Marcus Aurelius, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. Thanks for being on first. I think I just wanted to say the Widow Mine. You know the Widow Mine? We all know the Widow Mine, and we all don't like the Widow Mine. I mean, isn't it a bit... extreme that they can punish every single Zerg unit and the splash damage punishes you even more? And the only way to counter it really is to, you know, go very, very close to the range of it, but you really only have either an air unit or the Hydralisk to outrange it.
Are you German?
Yes, I am.
Very okay. good. Continue.
Well, can I? Is the Widowmine that bad?
It's
I feel like as I'm watching more players deal with it, like it is something. It's almost like a new skill. Everyone's got to kind of learn. Is that fair? Or
it
do you
felt
guys still...
worse at the beginning. Like I was pretty certain it was absurd, but then as gameplay kind of went on, it still is obviously strong. There's nobody out there that's like Widowmines. Ah. But I don't know that they're imbalanced. I've heard Bio Widowmine has some early pushes that are pretty tough, but even that I don't see. I mean, Greg would be the one to, or Ben maybe.
I think it's more the later stuff. Like early on, there's few enough mines that you can trigger them with Zerglings, particularly if the Terran isn't targeting them. But when you get to later on, they have like 12 mines sitting there. It's just you're not engaging that because at that point they also have enough bio that you're not sending in a few Lings and activating them. The Lings die before that 1.5 time finishes. I don't know. They're very strong, but I don't know if I'd say that in particular is overpowered.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as overpowered. They're like the combination of Widowmine bio is much easier to play than it is to beat them. So like when you're dropping and planting Widowmines all over the map, all it requires is like a shift click or two. Yeah. Whereas the Zerg really has to go about his business very, very carefully. Otherwise, he's going to lose a lot of stuff. So I think it's probably a little too easy to play late game, but that'd be my only complaint about it.
If only Zerg could poop out of the anus of the hatchery.
Yeah, you're telling me.
It'd be solved, Jeff.
I'm chatting with the Blizzard guy while all the show's going on. I think it's coming. You can't call it the Sarlacc pit because it's probably trademarked by Disney, but you can call it like the Sarlacc or the Rack-Sack Pack pit.
Rack-Sack Pack. Marcus Aurelius, thank you for your call.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Take care. Another one. Most normal name I could find on Skype. We got Chris online. Hello, Chris. Welcome
to
Inside the Game.
Man?
It's going good, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Word.
I had a quick question.
What's up?
I was wondering, like, why don't people take advantage of the fact that you know, everything, like, the regions are, hold on, let me get my words straight. Like you can get on the Korean server.
The global
and,
play.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Why are people taking advantage of it?
Yeah.
I think
like I live on the East Coast and I play on the Korean server like constantly.
And it's not laggy as shit.
No, it's. I mean, it's like between 180 and 220 ping, but I deal with it.
Yeah, pro gamers don't deal with that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's game breaking. It's not even worth playing at that. Like imagine.
Greg complains at 100. I think.
Yeah.
Right?
I'd say that's pretty accurate. Like,
well, I mean,
it's too much.
I'm used to playing on stuff like that though. Like, because before I used to have really bad internet, and just to play on the NA server, I would have between 150 and 200 ping. That was terrible.
I mean, Chris, what you're saying is that basically you've been acclimated to high ping. You've been like a long-time HPB forever.
He's got more gravity where he's from, man.
You know, he's in prison for so long that he can't leave prison, man. He doesn't know what's beyond those bars. It's like the same thing. I don't know what low ping's going to do.
You feel me?
No, I mean... Right? Like, you feel
no,
more
I
comfortable
mean,
in the Korea
like,
server.
Like,
why you gotta use prison as example, man?
The players on, like, the West Coast and whatnot, like, there is no reason, like, instead of complaining about, you know, I can't go to Korea, I can't do this, I can't do that, just make it a point to play on the Korean server instead of playing on the NA server, because, I mean, it's not like there's a language issue or anything. Like, you can't read or hear the fact that a nuke is being dropped or something like that, because, you know, you can change your shit.
We don't do it because of latency.
The ping,
like,
yeah. The
no,
ping.
One, no one can deal with 200.
Have you played on NA server at all? Like, at all?
Yeah, I mean, I play on NA server right now. Like, I'm top 8 masters, but...
I'm just saying, isn't that like... Doesn't that feel like a cold glass of delicious water after playing at 220 ping?
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, It's real nice, but I just...
It is really
nice. I don't
nice.
Know. If you can
put up with playing on Korea with really bad latency, then, like, all power to you. You're one of the few that can take advantage of that, but for the rest of us...
In the future, there's going to be this weird tournament. Someone's going to host a ping tournament. They're going to be like, you know, we got this weird idea. It'll be Total Biscuit. $10,000. They're going to host it on 300 ping. You're going to actually slash everyone's throats and destroy the tournament. And history will be made, man. You're ready for it.
I have one more question.
Go for it.
Yep.
And then Goat Lust.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
No, go ahead, Chris.
Go ahead.
What do you guys think about, like, I understand, in my opinion, I feel like the game is pretty balanced right now, but instead of, I hear a lot of people bitching about certain things. What do you feel about having, like, the maps balanced around the races instead of, you know?
Hey, I'm all for pre-laid creep on maps, so...
No, not like that. I mean, like...
Just balance it out. Just give me some extra creep to work with, man.
I mean, like balance it to certain strengths. Like have certain maps with cliffs over your natural for tanks and whatnot for Terran.
Oh my God! And did you play during the era of Lost
Temple?
Oh,
I know. That was stupid. I know.
Oh,
it was very
God.
Stupid.
You're bringing back bad memories, Chris.
No.
Okay.
All right. No, never mind. I'll feel you. That's a bad idea.
No, I mean. I bet
the road to good
better.
Ideas is paved with bad ones, Chris.
Yeah, I
appreciate it.
It's just I wasn't expecting to get on the call. Like I was sitting here watching the stream, and then I hear you call me. I'm like, oh damn.
We didn't mean to take you by surprise.
this shit just surprised me.
All I could say is that the moment that you said that, all I could feel was the last breaths of my drones as they just got fucking pelted with siege fire from atop that cliff.
Especially with tanks and shit being free now. Like, that shit's fucking free.
Yeah, so, yeah. Exactly. That shit is
good
free
to be a Terran,
now.
Huh, Ben? Huh?
That's okay.
Well, I mean, I'm Terran too, so I can't complain.
What the hell?
Wait. The Widoma. Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah. All right. Chris, thank you for your call, dude. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Take care. Bye. Wants some cliffs to put his siege tanks on. They are free. I remember actually watching Idra at an MLG be like, okay, I'll just spread some creep this way with my first queen, you know, and then I'll just, like, have this spine crawler there. And first time I saw him, I'm like, dude, whatever, man. I could do that. I'd get a spine crawler on the low ground, be spotting, get this. Fuck no, man. That shit would wreck me every day.
Yeah.
A nice
that.
Thor on that cliff.
Kulaz Ravine was a great map. Said nobody ever.
Said nobody. Nobody ever. Nobody.
I liked it, but...
Said Terrans.
Protoss were pretty okay with it in some situations.
Well, yeah, one base blink all in, I suppose.
Through the back rocks, that was kind of
worked pretty good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Goatlust, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi,
yeah? Yeah. Hello, fellas, how the fuck are we?
Fucking good.
Good.
Good, good,
good. Great.
You've been coming on every show for like the last 50, but somehow it's always awkward for the first 30 seconds when you come on. I don't know.
It's because I think that Goatless is really waiting for that moment where we're like, well, you know what, Goatless? It's been shitty. It's been a really shitty week, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's got to happen sometime, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And that's how you should live life, right there. Yeah, shit happens.
So,
we got kangaroos.
So, Greg, if fucking you get region locked to the US, you're going to miss getting looked after at, like, DreamHacks and shit like that, right?
What?
Didn't you say that they're generally pretty good to the players over
Oh
there.
Yeah, DreamHacks are awesome. Anyone who's been to one, especially the Invitationals, the BYOC one is kind of like, you know, walls of nerd funk everywhere, but the Invitationals are great. But on the other hand, IEM is like some of the worst player treatment, and I hate convention events, so it balances out.
Yeah, you won't have to stay in the fucking shitty accommodation, eh?
No more like student hostels with fucking radiators that you piss on and stuff, yeah.
What? That can't be real.
Never mind. I was ready.
Hostile 3 hasn't come out yet, Jeff. Just wait.
All right. I feel like keying on a radiator would be one of the worst ideas anyone could ever have ever.
No, because when I was there, there was no bathroom in the room. And the radiator was right next to the bed and it was making funny noises. So I was, and I tweeted because I was just pissed off about the whole situation, and I vent my anger through humor. So I tweeted that it was like one of those choose your own adventure books. Do I run to the bathroom to pee, or do I piss on the radiator to try and prevent it from being set on fire, but then have a room that smells like urine? And I just didn't know what to do.
It's funny because it reminded me of a friend who thought it would be a bright idea to piss on the sauna rocks in a sauna. And I imagine that it's like the exact same thing. And yes, it's a terrible idea. We hated him for it. He ruined the sauna. But that's what I imagine when someone says, I'm going to piss on a radiator. Greg, that's horrible. Yeah, don't do that. Just go to the bathroom.
Oh, wow.
So was that your question, Gomez?
No, that's not the question, mate. Okay. That was just a little vital chat. Anyhow.
Oh, that's not the question, mate.
So the rumors of this Blizzard stuff has, got me thinking a little bit, about Blizzard, putting a bit of money in, pumping up our scene a little bit. I'm just wondering, looking far into the future, I mean, nothing's concrete now. You probably can't answer this question all that well, but a few years after Legacy of the Void, whatever that is, 5-6 years time, whatever it is, what do you think is going to happen with Blizzard's, sort of input into the scene? Right now, their business model is selling copies of the game. That's how they actually, make a bit of fucking money out of this. Do you think they're going to, incorporate microtransactions into the game? That's why they're dabbling with the skins at this point, or do you think they're just going to, leave the scene to operate itself, or maybe even, market their game some other way, generate an income for themselves some other way?
I don't know. Maybe they come up with something creative, or someone else does, or something, a way to really make an RTS work well with a microtransaction kind of system or model. But as is, I don't really see them profiting too much after a year or two after Legacy of the Void. I see them moving on to Warcraft 4 or Starcraft 3 or just whatever the new focus is. And I see them leaving esports pretty much to run itself. Like, maybe they throw a Legacy tournament or they host some little event at BlizzCon every year just to pay homage to the game. But in the current model, certainly, they gain pretty much nothing out of continuing to invest in it after the game is totally out. And I don't really know. Like, MOBAs obviously are great for microtransactions. League has the best system set up. If they could do something like that, except make it work and make sense with RTS, then I could see it happening. But as is, I think they ditch it a year after Legacy of the Void.
But I think ditch has, and I'm not going to put words in Greg's mouth, but the connotation there would be negative. I think they're set up really well to do that. I think by handing MLG's DreamHacks and GSL's the keys to these tournaments and putting the Blizzard blessing on it, and then after 4 or 5 years of cultivation and working alongside Blizzard, I think you're in a really good place to be like, okay, MLG has a polished, successful tournament that they're going to run now with our StarCraft II product. DreamHack has theirs, GSL has theirs. Maybe every half a year we release a new skin, a couple of new dances or some shit. I don't know if we're going to do the microtransaction thing or not. They'll certainly still balance it for a while, but that's all pretty easy on the Blizzard side. As long as, like Greg said, there's just other esports companies running their game in accordance to Blizzard, but then also Blizzard has the option to be like, hey, BlizzCon's going to have a 16-man invitational, or we're still doing the WCS World Championship final at X event, and Blizzard's going to put it on for a chance to, again, showcase all the other things they're doing. Maybe it's Warcraft 4, maybe it's Galaxy of Warcraft, maybe it's whatever the hell they're doing. You still want to attract eyes to that, and the way Blizzard does that, well, one of the ways they help do that, I suppose, is by using their loyalist fans, because they've still put their games in a position to be successful, I feel.
Depending on how autonomous everything is, that definitely could happen. Like, they just then use the WCS or the yearly tournament finals to draw more people into BlizzCon even more, if they can fit them. And then everything else is just run by MLG, like the existing organizations. My only caveat is it feels like they're probably going to be putting a lot of money into this, especially if they're significantly altering it. Like, if they are going to region lock it and force MLG to only work with North Americans, Blizzard has to be putting a lot of money into that to make it worthwhile for MLG, or like to make it fair or profitable for them. So that money goes away. Does it still work? And that's all going to depend on how successful the scene is and how all that works out. But that definitely could be the case. It could still work out quite well.
DeMuslim, any thoughts?
Oh, I think these guys nailed it.
All right.
Sorry, Ben.
It's okay.
Goatless, thank you, sir. Yeah. I'm going to wrap the show.
All right, just one last thing.
Sure.
Greg, you said no programmers are playing on 200 ping, but, you know.
Except for Australians.
All of Australia.
Had to get that one out there.
You got to think of those gentlemen.
Oh, believe
in the
me,
future.
I played Brood War. Brood War, it went so if one side lagged, the other side lagged. So every time we got on IC Cup, a Ukrainian, a Russian, a Chinese, an Australian, or a Brazilian player, we stabbed our eyes out. So I do know how that works.
Lovely. All right. Thanks for answering the question, guys. Peace.
Peace. Take care.
Thank you, dude.
Bye bye.
Take care, dude.
Thank you.
Dat Goat List. All right, let's do a wrap. Want to do a wrap?
Let's do a wrap.
Who wants to start? The Muslim?
Hello. I'd just like to say thank you to all the viewers and all their opinions. They've all been a laugh while doing the show, so thank you. Also, Chris was kind of funny. Also, thanks to Team EG and all its sponsors. Title sponsor, Radical, Intel, Monster, Kingston. All been absolutely fantastic. Thank you for supporting us. Follow me on Twitch TV. My link is www.twitch.tv/TheMuslim. My Twitter is @TheMuslim. My Facebook fan page, TheMuslim UK. Thank you very much.
Big thank you to EG and all our sponsors. Ben just listed, of course. You can follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT. My Facebook fan page is facebook.com/Idrajit. And then my stream, which is twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Of course, I'll tweet about it whenever I am streaming. Going to be streaming quite a bit now. I had to miss the last few days for PAX, so I'm making up for that. So be sure to check that out, and thank you all for watching.
Hello. Make sure and follow me on Twitter, EG in control. That is the only important thing. Obviously, I'm going for the number one Twitter on the planet, so I'm about, I think it's 30 million short. So we got some work to do, but with your help, we can get one step closer. I want to give a special shout out to all the sponsors, of course, that have been supporting us, but an even specialist of specialers, specialist is a shout out to Kingston for the booth, to Need for Seat for making our butts feel great at PAX, and then also to Monster for sending the six-pack wielding Joe, who only eats Skittles. You might have seen him at some events. He's a great little guy, and he needs to play more StarCraft and less Minecraft, but other than that, he's a pretty superb human being. But we love all our sponsors, but we really appreciate the support of those guys over this course weekend because they helped us be happy. So thank you to them. I will be streaming later tonight, so look forward to that if that's something that excites you. Otherwise, have a great weekend, and it sounds like we might do role play tomorrow if that's something you're interested in.
Oh,
so
you're into that.
I'm yeah.
It was,
oh, snap. It was don't make fun of me, wait. Stop it. My God. Anyways, that's something we're doing tomorrow. So just kind of watch the Twitters. There's no account or, excuse me, there's no time or anything official just yet, but we're talking about it in our chat, and we'll get it out there for you guys. Otherwise, I'll see you soon on the stream. Thank you.
I would like to also shout out to Semi-Pro Joe because this weekend, while he was walking around with a bag of Skittles, recently you might have seen me on Twitter, express my hatred and dislike towards whoever the fuck makes Skittles. I don't remember right now. Mars Candy, probably. For replacing the green Skittle with it was lime. It's now green apple. So I've now had two large bags of Skittle with green apple. And you know what Joe had this weekend? He had a legacy bag of Skittles. And you know what he did?
Wow. Gave it to you.
He gave me all the greens, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you guys, like, sit on a bed together and...
No, but if you imagine, he probably poured them out in his hand. So they got in, like, Pac's hand and then, like, picked each one and put it back in the package. You want to know what? Zero
die.
Fucks were given. I ate them all. Thank you, Joe. Nice. And with that being said, live on 3 tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Game. And we'll see you next week during episode 67. Thanks for joining us. We're out of here. Peace. Oh, wrong song. Shit. There we go.